I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today. Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll, and Matt Cardona returns to Talk is Jericho. He and I have a lot to talk about. We both recently faced Nick Gage in death matches, and now Matt Cardona has the GCW title as a result. Matt and I are comparing notes on our respective matches with Mr. Gage. You hear how Matt ended up in GCW and how fans are reacting to his title win. They aren't happy. We also talk about action figure culture and Matt's podcast, the Major Wrestling Figure Podcast, the cool things that he and his co-host Brian Myers are doing outside the ring. They're starting their own action figure line, and Matt explains exactly how they're able to do that, what their figures will be like. And now that I've recovered from my death match and the five layers of labors of Jericho, of course, looking towards possibly having my final match this week at All Out versus MJF. But I'm also hitting the road with Fozzy this week. We start Thursday, September 2nd in Columbus, Ohio. FozzyRock.com has all the ticket information. We got a ton of sellouts. Most of the Fozzy VIP meet and greets are sold out on this tour as well. Just go to FozzyRock.com. There are tickets available for Columbus at the Newport Music Hall on Thursday and Joliet on Friday, Belvedere on Saturday. Both of those shows are in Illinois and about 50 miles away from Chicago and All Out. So if you're in town looking for some extra rock and roll, come see Fozzy on the 3rd in Joliet. That's a Friday night, and Saturday in Belvedere. Then on Monday, we are in Kansasville, Wisconsin, with, of course, the pay-per-view of All Out being on the 5th. Find more Fozzy information at FozzyRock.com. Pittsburgh, Flint, Cleveland, Johnson City sold out. Lots of sellouts. So if you want to come join us, please go to FozzyRock.com and check that out now. All right, Matt Cardona returning to Talk is Jericho, starting now. So one of the most talked about guys in the wrestling business right now is Matt Cardona, who is now possibly the king of the death match, which is kind of like not even funny, but it's an interesting thought until 3 days later. I have a match with Nick Gage as well, and now I'm a death match guy as well. And it just made me laugh to how I think both of us, specifically you for sure, have really kind of branched out and did something completely different that in a lot of ways has now completely revitalized your career.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I'm not pretending to be this tough guy. If you know me, you know I'm this goofball, I'm this nice guy. But I know, like, if I had to be defending myself or a tough guy, I am. But I don't present myself that way, you know. So I'm not trying to prove to anybody that I'm this tough guy. But I think if you watch this match or you saw some clips online, some pictures, like, I got my ass kicked, but I also kicked some ass.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, like, I'm the guy who was wearing the one-legged tights a decade ago, the woo-woo-woo, the broski, and, like,
right,
that was 10 years ago, Chris. Like, I've grown as a man, as a wrestler, and I'm not pretending to be this deathmatch wrestler now. Like, listen, I am the deathmatch king. Sure. I beat the king. I dethroned him. But, listen, I'm not doing deathmatches every weekend, so don't email me at bookmattcardona@gmail.com expecting I'm going to do deathmatches in your local indie fed. It's not happening.
So let me ask you a question. So what was the kind of the catalyst to get you to do this match in the first place?
Yeah. So things were going down on social media, and I don't know if, like, fans were tweeting it or Nick Gage was tweeting me, and I just thought it was a joke. Like, I'm thinking, like, there's no way I'm going to fight this guy. Like, no way. Like, I know who Nick Gage is. The deathmatch style, I respect it. It's just not my thing. It's not my thing at all. I tried watching the Nick Gage Dark Side of the Ring. I couldn't get through it. It was too gory and disgusting for me. I couldn't do it. But I realized, like, sometimes in wrestling, you actually got to give the fans what they want, you know? And the fans wanted this match. And I figured, why not? Like, what's going to happen, right? Like, how, like, unless I die, what's the worst that could happen? And I went in there, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm sure I'm going to bleed a little bit. Let me wear all white. I'll get a couple trickles of blood on me. I did not imagine that my white shirt would turn completely red. I did not imagine how violent it would get. Like, I told myself before, like, there's no way I'm doing that pizza cutter bullshit. No way I'm going through glass. But Chris, you're in there with Nick. Like, when you're in there, Nick Gage is going to make you do things you don't want to do. So I got the pizza cutter, went through the glass, but I don't regret any of it. Like, it's a week and a half later. There's still blood coming out of my back. I have to go to an urgent care after this because I think my back is infected. But, like, I don't regret a single second of it because, oh, man, I felt so alive in there. Because for so long, I was this white meat baby face. And at the end of the day, I still am. Like, I haven't changed who I am, but that audience doesn't like me for me. And I get to, you know, just kind of say, you a little bit. It's fun. I love it. I love it.
See, but the thing about it that I really enjoy about the fact that you did it was you mentioned, yeah, there's a certain type of vibe for Matt Cardona and, you know, L.I., woo-woo-woo, the guy who, you know, as Conan would say, plays with his toys on a podcast and all stuff. But you're also a veteran wrestler at this point. And I think one of the best things about I think we talked about this when you and Brian came on the show last time about being let go from WWE is now there's no more chains or restrictions or boxes that you have to be in. And as soon as I heard, you know, Cardona and Nick Gage, I was like, this is really smart for you because it's a reinvention, which then adds a different dimension to your character and more importantly gives you more diversity, which in turn will give you more longevity.
100%. And Chris, I mean, not to kiss your ass, but you are the king of reinventing yourself and you know everything about longevity. And yeah, absolutely. I saw this as an opportunity for myself and not I say this all the time. I don't care about proving people wrong, but I want to prove myself right. And I want to prove my fans right, whether they were fans of the Major Brothers or the Ed Sheds or the YouTube Day, whatever, or the Major Brothers podcast. I want them to know, like, hey, like, I root for this guy and I made the right choice. And this is going to sound cocky, but I don't give a shit. Like, I dare you to find somebody who's been counted out by this business more times than me and has come back. And, you know, I just keep coming back and coming back and coming back because I love this business. I am the cockroach of the wrestling business. I don't mean that in a bad way. Like, you just can't kill me. You're not going to get rid of me because I might not, you know, I might die not ever being a top wrestling star, but I'm going to die trying.
Well, and you almost did die. But now you're the GCW champion. And once again, I really appreciated the fact that you did that. And also, too, the guys in GCW and Nick Gage and I don't know if it's Brett Lauderdale or whatever in bringing you in because it's money. That's what wrestling is. It reminded me of kind of mid-90s ECW when they're this certain type of world of like, we are the most hardcore of wrestlers. And then Jerry Lawler shows up and gets major heat because you're not one of us. And meanwhile, Lawler knows exactly what to do to get the reaction that he wants. And that's kind of what you did.
Yeah. Like, I'm calling these people the GCW universe and they hate it. So I just keep doing it more. And listen, I knew I was going to get hated. I knew if I won this match that, listen, I thought there'd be a couple bottles thrown. I didn't realize what was going to happen. If you watch the footage, people were throwing pizza cutters at me, Chris. Like, that's where I draw the line. You know, like, when you throw a pizza cutter at me, like, some of these fans, listen, they know it's a show and they're like, they want to boo me because it's fun, but some people genuinely hate me. There were some like weirdos with Zack Ryder action figures like hanging by like nooses. Like, I'm like, what is this? You're a real human being? Like, you're out in public? Like, you don't care if this is on social media?
Yeah.
Like, that's the scary part.
Well, didn't you say too, like, I don't know if you got death threats, but yeah, your fiance got death threats.
And people were like, I hope that Nick Gage kills Matt Cardona, kills Chelsea Green. Like, I don't know. Are they serious or not? Because they're really putting us out there.
Yeah. And the thing that was cool, too, was once again, I mean, when I first saw it, because you came in and you kind of tell the story of almost mimicking John Moxley.
Yes.
And then you unmask and it's Matt Cardona. Now, take it in consideration where we were at the time, whether that was a month ago or whatever. You're like, what is he doing? Like, he's going to get so much heat for this. And then you're like, oh, he's going to get so much heat for this.
Yes,
I guess.
Yes.
So kind of tell the idea of how that came about.
Yeah. So, I mean, the plan was I was going to go in there and just do, I don't know if it was going to be a one-time deal or a two-time deal. Now at this point, let's see where it goes. And now I'm the champ. So now I'm here for a while. But I don't want to be, you know, I'm not going to turn into like mean guy, Matt Curto. I am me and the people just hate me for being me.
Right.
And yes, of course I'll evolve a little bit and show a little bit of an attitude. But the response I got from doing the Moxley thing and laying him out, like I knew it would be like kind of buzzworthy, but I didn't realize the buzz it was going to get. And I'm like, oh man, we're really onto something here. So I just need to play this up until this homecoming match and be the biggest douchebag I can on social media. And I knew if I won this match, like I said, I knew there was going to be a negative reaction, which I love, you know, like like going back, you watch the video. It's so, to me, it's cool. Like people throw bottles, pizza totally cutters, cool, whatever. Yeah. I did not imagine that we would be number one, trending number one over UFC in the Olympics. So, you know, it's GCW, Matt Curto, and Zack Ryder all trending number one. I mean, because at the end of the day, GCW is it's an independent promotion, you know, and it was trending number one over UFC and over the Olympics. And, you know, I am proud of that because I joke around, I'm the internet champion, but I mean, 10 years after I started that YouTube show, I'm still figuring out ways to be relevant just because I love this damn business so much.
Yeah. And once again, like you said, and reinvent yourself into this different type of performer that nobody expected. And like you mentioned, I mean, that visual of all of the bottles being thrown in the ring, like you said, pizza cutters and all this other stuff, it does remind me once again of Terry Funk in ECW Arena with all the chairs getting thrown in.
I love it. You know, I love it.
It's a moment.
Yeah. And it was like, I'm not going to lie, afterwards was a disaster. Like, there's no medical team backstage at GCW.
Wow.
There's one nurse who stitched me up in two spots, but that was it. And she just, like, left everything else open. I'm like, she's like, go take a shower. I'm like, okay, well, the bleeding has not stopped. So one of my friends was there. He let me use his hotel. I showered, and then I had to fly to Anaheim because I was going to Disneyland. So I didn't have any, like, Band-Aids or anything with me. Like, he didn't have any Band-Aids. So he taped a towel to my back. And that's how I flew cross-country with a towel taped to my back. And then you know how it is when you bleed. Now it is, like, dry blood. It's now stuck to my back. So I had to take a shower when I landed and just let it, like, rip off my back. Like, just let it get so soaking wet that it got heavy and just ripped off my back. It was miserable. It was miserable. But I don't regret it.
Talking about the yin and the yang of life, getting smashed over the head with a light tube on a Friday and riding It's a Small World on a Saturday.
Bro, is that not the heat, though? I brought the GCW title to Disneyland.
Oh, my gosh.
And I took a picture holding it in front of the castle. Like, I know that my fans like me and support this and think it's funny and cool and awesome, but I know that rabid GCW universe hates it, and I'm going to do whatever I can to make them hate me more. I don't want to convert them. You know, I have nothing to prove. If they come over, cool. Happy to have you as a fan. But I'm going to make you hate me even more. That's my goal. And that's the fun part.
Happy to have you as an enemy too, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter your search based on the qualities that are most important to you. Then you can book a free 15-minute consultation call with any therapist you're interested in seeing, so you can get a feel for whether they're the right fit before you commit to a full-length session. Alma also makes it easy for mental health care providers to navigate insurance. That's why 95% of therapists in their directory accept insurance for sessions, so you can find care that's affordable without stressing about the paperwork. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy60 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy60.
Let me ask you a question, because once again, I went through it 2 or 3 days after you did and have gone through it for years. But here's something people don't realize. When you do a match like this, even when you get cut on your forehead, but a death match, obviously there's broken glass and you got the cuts on your back and on your arms. And I had them all over as well. What did your bed look like in the morning when you woke up?
Okay. So like I said, that night I didn't sleep at all. I had, because I was in, where was that? It was Atlantic City.
Atlantic City.
And then I was like trying to get cleaned up. I was like panicking. I'm like, what do I do? I'm just like, the bleeding won't stop. So like I said, I taped the towel to my back, drove to Philly. I had like an hour or so before my flight. I was going through social media. I couldn't even get through all my mentions. That's how like I couldn't believe it. It was nuts.
Right.
It's something I'm not really used to, you know? And then I flew, and then I had to get a hotel. I took a little nap, bro. When I woke up, there's pictures on social media. It looked like either I was murdered or I murdered somebody. It was it went all the way through. It did not touch the mattress, luckily, but every like the comforter, the sheet, because I slept over the comforter. I'm like, I don't want to ruin the sheets. It went through that. It was everywhere. We had to tell the hotel, like, hey, listen, nobody died up there. I said I got injured. I said I got injured at work, and I didn't realize how much I was bleeding. But it was bad. And then, like, for the next, like, even this morning, I woke up and there was blood. Like, a week and a half
still
later, not a lot, a couple trickles.
But still, yeah.
That's like I said, I'm going to urgent care after this because there's definitely something wrong. Like, something's definitely infected. It's not healing properly. It is what it is, though.
Well, think about this. I mean, we're rolling around in a ring where there's been 4 or 5 or 10 matches beforehand, and there's glass. I mean, and who knows what the hell else is on there. I'm surprised that I didn't get an infection yet. You know, it's just an average, obvious thing that's going
to
happen.
Yeah, that first night where I laid him out when I was pretending to be Moxley, I was like, yeah, this is great. Like, I went to the back and I'm like, where's all this blood coming from? I like sliced open my wrist during a DDT just from like the glass being in the ring. Mm. But that was nothing compared to the deathmatch where I was bleeding and had so many cuts. I didn't know where I was bleeding from. You know what I'm saying? There was just blood everywhere. And like I said, I knew, listen, it's deathmatch. I knew I was going to get hit with a light tube or something. I knew there was going to, ooh, maybe if I wear all white, there'll be some cool trickles of blood. The white shirt turned completely red. And the scariest part was I superplexed him through a pane of glass. And the referee is like, do you want to continue? But this wasn't like an act. Like you could tell, like you could see the fear in his eyes. I'm like, he's like, do you want to stop the match? I'm like, why? It's like your shoulder and tricep are really, really bad. And then you go back and watch the footage, and it's like ooze coming out of it. Not even like blood. It's like thick ooze. And like when he was scared, this guy who does all these death matches, that scared the shit out of me.
Yeah, and that's like we were in Charlotte when I had the match with Gage. And it was funny because now with COVID, some hotels don't clean the room until you check out. And that really bothers me. Like I like coming in the room every night with a new. So I woke up in the morning. Actually, it's funny because Cody had texted me. He must have been, I think he was driving or something. It was early in the morning. He goes, how you doing? I said, it looks like somebody was murdered in my bed.
Yes. Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, motherfuckers, you didn't want to come clean my room? Well, this is what happens. Now you're going to come clean it and you're going to think somebody was murdered in here.
Right.
What was kind of a few of the worst bumps that you took and the ones that maybe were a little bit crazier than you expected them to be?
Yeah. So like I told myself going in, I'm like, listen, I know I'm going to take some light tubes or a chair. But I'm like, I do not want to go through glass. But like I said, when Nick Gage is in there with you, shit's going to happen. And the superplex through the glass is what really got me. I don't know if it was a combination of going through the glass plus broken glass and light tubes already in the ring. But after
that, give the superplex or take
I gave the superplex.
Got it.
And I don't know. It's glass, Chris. Like there's no safe way to cut through glass.
Yeah.
And it just like ripped me up big time. And like, I was almost in shock afterwards when I saw like my back, like in the mirror afterwards. I'm like, oh my, I'm going to look like Sabu for the rest of my life. Hopefully like it heals up. But like, I can see these scars forming now. And I guess it's cool, like battle scars, but listen, I'm a handsome man, Chris. I don't want this for the rest of my life. I don't want to do this every week and have it all over my body.
Yeah, and that's the problem with it too, where you know, you don't really know what to expect. And for me, I had a shirt on as well, and I had gloves on, but I had to cut the fingers off because you still have to use your fingers to manipulate and do things. And sliced there, which really hurt the hand.
Oh, yes. I had the same thing, yeah.
Same thing. And then the back, getting planted on the broken tempered glass, and you just feel like the So then there was a part where on your match and mine where you see our back and because I remember thinking like I don't want this to be a bloodbath, like I just want this to be, you know, pretty intense and pretty violent. And then there's a scene though, like right towards the end, where there's blood coming out of everything. I'm like, we are so gonna get kicked off the TV here. There's no way they're gonna let this work.
And that's what I was saying to myself in the match. I'm like, where is this blood even coming from? Because I don't want to say I wasn't feeling pain, because obviously I was, but the adrenaline was, the rush was insane, and the crowd, and I was just eating it up. But I was looking at myself, I'm like, where am I bleeding? Because there was just blood everywhere. I didn't know where the actual cuts were until I took that shower. And I'm sure you could back up on this. That shower sucked. That first shower where there's still glass in you.
Yeah, stinging.
Oh, my God. It was miserable. Miserable.
What's crazy for you, too, because like you said, you really didn't have a doctor there to pick out any little bits.
Yeah, nothing. The luckily, there was a nurse who stitched me up.
Right.
But like there was only two areas. I think there were other areas you should have stitched up. You know what I'm saying? Because like there was some bad ones and like the blood wouldn't stop. And like I just wrestled this past weekend again and like not a death match, a regular match. And like my stitches opened back up. I'm like, oh, that's probably why I'm infected.
So what happens now then, now that you're the GCW champion? Because I know, I'm assuming now, I mean, I'm not assuming, GCW is bigger than it's ever been because it's the 1-2 punch of their huge show, the huge revelation of Cardona winning, then Gage is on AEW. It seems like GCW is kind of at the top of the list of indie promotions right now.
Right. So here's, I don't think anybody, myself included, and GCW, thought this was going to be as big as it got. I thought we all, listen, this is going to be cool. It's going to be fun. People talk about it for a couple of days. But now the issue is like, I'm like a professional wrestler who hustles and tries to do everything. I'm booked. Yeah, I'm like fully booked up. So now we got to pencil in where can I actually like wrestle these shows? Because it's not like I'm just hanging out. Like I didn't sign this big multi-million dollar GCW contract, Chris. Like I'm wrestling every weekend. So now we have to figure out where can I go? Where can I take a red eye? Where can I, you know, how can we make this work? And I genuinely want to elevate GCW. I think the element of people hating me is very, very cool. I think the outsider coming in, being not that I'm anti-GCW, but I'm not that style, and their fans will be anti-Matt Cardona. And listen, this is so much fun for me because now I'm thinking of ways, how can I make them hate me even more? I have a whole laundry list of ways to change GCW. I'm not going to, you know, reveal them now. I might put out, remember when Cody left WWE, put out that list with his hands on? I might put out one of those lists, you know what I'm saying? Like of all things I want to change, maybe like a custom title, you know, maybe, Get them some ring aprons, get them some doctors backstage. I just want to make it a little more professional because, listen, at the end of the day, all the guys who are there, all the guys and girls, they're busting their ass, right? There's no denying it's a rabid fan base. So all the elements are there for a successful promotion. I think a couple of things need to be changed a little bit.
I have a suggestion for you. You need to show up for your next show with Mickey Mouse ears with your title belt. And that's just say, one. I went to Disneyland, and then maybe hand out a couple ears.
Oh,
and
man, that'd be great. That'd be great. That'd be so great.
I mean, and that's the thing, too, because this is such a great time for wrestling right now. And I know when you were originally released, I think it was during the pandemic, the lockdown, and you guys were very smart in kind of shifting over to the podcast world. Right. And you guys have a very huge fan base from that. But now that there's shows up and running again, and you've made yourself a viable draw, it seems to me that you could probably be working as much as you want to at this point.
Yeah, so like as of now, like I'm fully booked up from now until the end of the year, except for one weekend that I took off for a bachelor party that I might or might not have. I need one weekend off for my bachelor party if I have one. But it's for me, it's awesome because I'm choosing the shows I want to do. I'm getting to do different things. So whether like I'm wrestling in West Virginia and doing the, this guy's a chicken. I did that last Saturday, the Saturday before, I'm having a death match with Nick Gage. You know what I'm saying? So like I'm getting to do all these different things. It's so much fun. And at the end of the day, like it's a job. Yes, this is like what I do for a living, but this is my passion, my dream. And I'm having so much fun now. And I know it might be cliche to say like I'm having more fun than I've ever had before, but I am. I genuinely am because not that I'm saying I had handcuffs on me before, but there's no handcuffs now and I'm able to try all these things. And listen, not everything I do is going to be a success. No way. But at least I have the opportunity to try all these things. And all I've ever wanted was an opportunity.
One more question about GCW, then I want to talk about what you just said. What did you think of Nick Gage as a person, as a performer, backstage, in the ring, etc.?
I respected this guy before. I know he died, almost died in a match, came back. Certainly respected him.
Had you heard of him?
Oh, of course. Gotcha. I've heard of him. I remember people years ago wearing the free Nick Gage shirts when he was in jail, you know?
Right.
Like I said, I'm not like a death match, like, fan, so I don't like watch this stuff. Of course, with the Dark Side of the Ring, I tried to watch it, but I'm like, I don't want to see this shit. And little did I know I'd be a part of it. But I respect it because how can I describe this? The connection he has with his fan base, the audience. So when I walked through the curtain, they almost didn't let me get to the ring because they hated me so bad. So they were like bum rushing me, right? There's you trying to get at me. But when he comes to the ring, they're bum rushing him, but because they just want to touch him. You know what I'm saying? They just want to like interact with him. And he's got little kids, like loving him. Like somebody who on paper should be this ultimate heel is like Superman there. Mm-hmm. And I love that he cares about his fans. And go on like social media and see some of like the cameos he makes for his fans. Like he's such like, he seems so down to earth. But in that ring, he's a tough son of a bitch. And oh my God, like if I never fight him again, I'll be happy. Because this guy, I'm sure he feels pain, but he doesn't stop.
Well, and that's the thing. Somebody was like saying, oh, you got to have Nick on Talk as Jericho. And I'm like, I don't really want to have him on Talk as Jericho because I like the idea of this match that we had, just kind of leaving it alone because it was very violent. And he is like, the thing about him is I had so many people text me before the match saying, you got to watch out for this guy. And they're not people in the business, they're fans.
I had people in the business saying it to me.
In the business.
Somebody, I'm not going to say who it is. Someone who is like a regular name in the business texted me that day, do not do this match. And I'm like, you're kidding me, right? Like, do not do this match. You're going to get hurt. And like, then I was scared.
Yeah. I had a lot of people, like I said, that were in the know, but not maybe in wrestlers per se. Like, you know, you got to watch this guy. If he tries to shoot on you, you got to take him out. And you got to watch this. And I'm like thinking to myself, this guy is playing this psycho character. And when you talk to him, like he's a really, like you said, he's a pretty cool guy. But when you look into his eyes, there's something not right. Like he has the years of jail in his head and all these bumps that he's taken. So when people are saying that, you're like, oh, you don't understand. He's just playing a character. I'm thinking, but when you see him, you're like, if this guy does decide to go rogue, what am I going to do?
Like when I'm in there with him, and he takes his light tube and he breaks it over his head.
Yes.
And he's coming at me. There's nothing fake about that.
That's like, nothing fake about that.
I'm like, get me out of here. Even before, listen, Chris, before the match, I'm not lying. Like, before, like, my music gets, I'm thinking, like, is this some big, like act? Are they going to try to kill me in there? And, like, GCW kills Zack Ryder in the ring. I'm like, I was scared.
Is this some kind of cult experience? They're just going to pull a hostile on you and murder you?
I have no idea. Thank God I'm here talking to you about it. Like, I thought I could legit die.
Yeah. We had a spot in our match. Well, it wasn't really a spot. Obviously, ours is on TV, so it's a little different than yours because there's a time constraint. And I think Nick was a little nervous for that reason. Plus, I think, you know, we drew over 1 million people, so it's obviously the biggest crowd he's ever wrestled in front of in this, you know, in TV land. And he gave me a pile driver on the glass and smashed the stuff over me, and then he breaks the glass and he kind of sticks me with it. And then before he goes to get more light tubes, he comes back to do it some more. And I'm like, you've done it enough, dude. He came back the second time, and this time he was really getting me. And if you see this one here, this is not a razor, you know, it's not a gimmick. It is a literal light tube glass abrasion,
right,
from that sticking. And that's why I was like, if this motherfucker keeps going, I'm going to have to kill him because enough's enough already. And that's – but I don't think he was doing maliciously. That's just him in this – zone.
So the part of Dark Side of the Ring that I did see is Moxley talking about how Nick Gage put the pizza cutter in his mouth and like sliced him. As he's giving me the pizza cutter, he puts it like by my face. I'm like, oh my God, he's going to do the thing in my mouth. But no, he just legitimately bites my head. I'm covered in blood and he's biting me. I'm like, you're a sick dude. That's what I'm thinking myself. Yeah. Like, as I'm in pain, I'm thinking, this guy is disgusting.
Yes. And the pizza cutter as well is completely legit. Anybody that's like, oh, put a pizza cutter up to your forehead, just like lightly press. Then imagine a guy literally coming back and forth.
Yeah, no thanks.
I mean, yeah, exactly. I'm glad that I did it, same as you. I had a lot of people go, well, Jericho didn't have to do that. Cardona didn't have to do that. If you know anything about us as performers, there was no reason why we wouldn't do it. It's part of the story.
And listen, I think I've put up more t-shirts this past week than I have in a year. If people are like, how many more bloody pictures can he post? Trust me, I got a lot more, because I'm going to shove this in everyone's face who hates me, because I know my fans love it. And if you don't like me, I don't want you to like me. So it's right. Like, I can do no wrong here, Chris. Like, my fans love it and my haters hate it. So it's like, I'm going to keep doing it.
So let's talk a little bit about how you're kind of having fun and really enjoying wrestling. And like we said, both of us worked in WWE for a long time. And I would never bash WWE, because it's a great place. Obviously, they're very successful, but there is a certain way of doing things there. And when you break free of that, either if you walk away or forced to, you realize, like, oh my gosh, like, there is a whole world out here of wrestling that is completely different and in a lot of ways a million times better than what you do in WWE. And obviously you've experienced that.
Yeah, listen, like you said, Chris, like, I my time in WWE, I'm so grateful for it. I mean, if I wasn't in WWE, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. You know, I wouldn't have a house. I wouldn't. That's the only job I ever had. I got signed when I was 20 years old, and wow. I got fired when I was like 34, 35. So I was there for a long time, and I'm very grateful, but it was time to go. And I think I said it the last time we talked on your podcast, like, I didn't re-sign my deal because I wasn't sure if I wanted to stay or go, but I should go. So they made a decision for me. And they're like, so I guess we both kind of felt the same way. But once the pandemic hit, there was nowhere to go, really, because there was no independence running. We were in the middle of this lockdown. Luckily, I had the podcast. But now, I'm every weekend, I'm doing something. Like I said, whether I'm doing the chicken, or having these death matches, or having like big 8-man tag matches with like our podcast crew. Like, it's just been so much fun to go out there, and I love working hard. I love hustling. I love like I have a safe in my house just of all the cash I'm getting from like the gimmick table. Like, I love this. I love working hard, and I'm a very creative person. I felt like in WWE, like, you can only do so much. If they won't allow you to do something, like, you can't do it. You know, I tried with my YouTube show. We're not going to get into that. I can write a whole book about that. It didn't work out. So, but now I can try anything. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Like, now I have a podcast about theme parks also. And if people don't listen to it, I don't care. It's fun for me. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just fun trying things. And at the end of the day, like, I am a kid who grew up loving wrestling, and now I'm still doing it. I want to do it for as long as I can. And I want to be successful at it too. And I definitely have not, listen, I'm very grateful for the moments I have had, but I haven't achieved what I want to achieve. So, like I said earlier, like, you can't get rid of me. You can't kill me. Right. I'm going to keep coming back. I'm going to keep trying and busting my ass. And nobody can say that, you know, I didn't die trying.
Well, what are some of the other things you want to achieve?
Like, I definitely want to be a world champion. And yes, I'm the GCW world champion, but I feel like I have so much to offer for so many different companies. I've never been to Japan or Mexico besides with WWE. You know, where you're not really, you don't really experience the culture there. You know, you're there for a couple of days, you go from one city to the next. Like, I want to, you know, get bussed around. I want to experience it the real way. I want to have these kick-ass matches. I don't want to, you know, in WWE sometimes, you know, I'd be on like Superstars or Main Event and be like, all right, well, you can't go to the floor. Like, I don't want to have restrictions or rules. Yeah. I just want to go out there and just be me and try things out and just have fun. And if I fail, I fall flat on my face, fine. But I just want to try.
I feel that this kind of character death match, you know, experience showing that you're a legit draw is going to really help you in other places.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so too. And listen, it's definitely going to give me a little bit of an edge. I think people will look at me differently, which is cool. But that wasn't my goal go into it. If that's the result, I'll take it. You know, right. I think some people, they see me and they remember the guy 10 years ago with the headband and doing the fist bumps and the guy who has a podcast about wrestling figures. But if the bell rings and I need to kick your ass, like, I will. And like I said, I didn't need to prove that to anybody. But if I did in this process, then so be it.
Well, it's funny too, because and it's kind of the same for me, and obviously not quite, because you're in much more jacked up. But when you see a guy like Matt Cardona, and in WWE, you're a good shape guy, as you should be. This is wrestling. You go to a GCW or go to some of these other companies, and you're you know, Hulk Hogan in 1988, 4 inches taller, and you have shoulders and biceps where most of these guys are wearing, you know, cut off shirts and jorts. You know what I mean? How was your feeling about that?
Listen, I when I first, like when I did like the cup of coffee in AEW last year, everyone was like, oh my God,
right.
Matt Cardona, he got so big. I'm like, no, I've been in shape for years. It's just like I'm presented like a star. I'm not just like already in the ring, Zack Ryder. Like I have an entrance. I get to come out. And like, when you're presented like a star, you look like a star. You know what I'm saying? And now, since I'm my own boss, I'm going to present myself like a star wherever I go.
Mm-hmm. At all times. Let's talk about AEW. One of the things that AEW does is bring in guys from other companies, and bring, we, like we said, we had Nick Gage last week, and we have Juventud tonight, and there's different guys coming in and out, and you were here for a few matches yourself. How was that experience for you?
I loved it. It was super cool. You know, do I wish it was with people there? Sure, but the people weren't there.
Oh, right.
It is what it is. But everyone was super welcoming. It's something I definitely needed. I needed to, like I said, sometimes perception is reality, right? So when people are like, oh my God, he got so big, he got in great shape. If you want to believe that, sure. But I was in the same shape that I was in for years. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And, you know, and AEW, it just didn't work out at the time. There's so many people there, and there just wasn't anything for me at the time, and no hard feelings, not to say I'll never be there again, you know, because I would love to be. It's obviously, there's no doubt AEW is the place to be, right? It's the talk of the wrestling business every single week. So it's great. But just at that time, it just wasn't, you know, timing's everything, and it wasn't the right time.
Were you brought in on like a five show appearance or just a couple times, or how was that?
Yeah, I want to say it was like a three show appearance. I ended up doing four. And then, you know, honestly, like I was under the impression the contract would be coming. It didn't come, and it is what it is. You have to move on. You can't sit around and wait. You can't cry about it. You just got to bust your ass and move on to the next one, you know?
How was it for you working in front of no crowds?
It was so awkward, right? Because that's what this business is all about, like feeding off the crowd. Even when, you know, I started doing Impact, which Impact has been awesome to me, but at first there was no people there. So like when you, at least at AEW, there were people like in the crowd, you know, like wrestlers as the crowd, you know? Yeah. At Impact, there was nothing. So you're taking a bump and there's like nothing. Like you could hear a pin drop. So I would like just like oversell and yell and scream and make noise just so I felt something, and then I'd blow myself up just making more noise.
You don't know what's working, what's not
working. Yeah, exactly. And that's what wrestling is. It's not like all this choreographed stuff. Like you need to play off the people.
I was talking to Gabriel Iglesias the other day, Fluffy, and we were just talking. He goes, you must be so happy to be back in front of crowds. And I was like, yeah, like, dude, it was like literally like being a comedian and telling jokes at the wall.
Right, exactly.
Like, I think this is funny, but I'm not really too sure if it's funny because there's no reactions to anything.
Yeah, it's just wrestling, it has to be in front of a crowd. Listen, we had to do what we had to do, right? The show must go on. What were we going to do, just not wrestle for a year and a half? Like, it had to happen.
Exactly.
And I think everybody made the best of it. But now with the people back, it's like an instant change. You can just tell on every show that you watch, just the product is so much better because you need that audience, you need that fan participation.
Right, exactly. So where was kind of the first matches that you did where you had crowds back? Because you said you've been working so much and all over the place.
Yeah, so it's it was around like April. I went to Hornswoggle's promotion in Wisconsin, and he had 1,000 people there, bro.
It felt
like the Pontiac Silverdome WrestleMania 3. That's what it felt like to me, because I went from almost a year with not a person to 1,000 people. I felt like The Rock coming out when I came. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how I'm sure the reaction wasn't that good. But to me, that's what it felt like. Just to like slap a fan's hand or just, you know, just hear something. It was like, I'm getting goosebumps right now just thinking about it, because you need the fans. And I think, not that we took the fans for granted, but we just never thought they'd go away. Right?
So all of a sudden, you never thought that was going to happen.
Right. All of a sudden, they're gone. Like, what is wrestling with no fans? What are you, like, backyard wrestling with nothing? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
It's just to have the people
it's
back.
It's training.
Right. I think it's actually worse than training.
Yeah, I had the same reaction. I remember even at the beginning, people were like, I feel so bad for the new guys, you know, working in front of no crowds. I was like, the new guys, they feel bad for me.
Right.
You know, I've been working in front of thousands of people since I was 21 years old. This is terrible.
Exactly. Right. And, you know, like, it is what it is, and I'm glad we're over it. But I think now the wrestling business is going to be hotter than ever because the wrestlers obviously are hungrier than ever, but the fans are too. They went this long. So I'm hoping that they keep up this enthusiasm.
So what are some of the other places that you worked? Because like I said, it seems like there's so many companies and promotions. And what are some of your favorites that you've been to?
Yeah, so I've been trying to do like all these indies that I can. I did AIW. I've been doing, like I said, I did Impact, which is Impact has been super cool to me. Gave me like an opportunity. And I talk about being like always ready, right? Like I was at the gym one day and I got a text like, hey, can you do this Impact pay-per-view tomorrow? And that's like, I think January or February. And at the time, since there were no indies, I hadn't been in the ring since September when I did AEW. Well, I'm like, well, shit, like, I better not blow up tomorrow. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Thank God I'm in shape. Thank God I'm tan, ready to go. So Impact has been great. And then also, like, with our major Wrestling Fever podcast, we started putting on, like, not only live podcasts, but we started our own, like, wrestling promotion. Where,
really?
Yeah. So, like, that was, like, super cool. And, like, we did it in front of, like, I want to say no real fans. We did it like how wrestling was at the time, but we aired it on like, I don't want to say pay-per-view because it wasn't pay-per-view, but you could buy it to, and we made like a lot of money. We're like, this might be like our new business model, you know, like, because it's only our, we're not trying to sell it to like 100,000 people. We're trying to sell it to our core audience, and they're eating it up. Like they're eating up when we have a character named Stang, you know, who's dressed up as like a fake Sting. Like they love it. Like if a regular wrestling fan is watching, it's like, what the hell is it? I think it's like, I describe it like talking Japomania, but not as bad.
Do you know where's the Stang come from? Because there's a real story about Stang.
Yeah, so we were interviewing Brian Myers and I were interviewing Heath Slater for our major wrestler podcast. We were asking like who his favorite wrestler was growing up. So oh, my favorite wrestler was Stang. We're like, who? Stang. And we're like, who? Oh, Sting.
Well, there was a guy called Hardbody Harrison in WCW.
Yeah.
He was a guy who also wore the one long tight.
There we go, baby. Tight. That's right.
I think he ended up in jail for like, you know, racketeering or prostitution or kidnapping or something. But he actually was pitching an idea to DDP where he would be the heated rival to Sting. And he would call himself Stang.
I like it.
And where Sting had the white face paint with the black, this guy was black, so he would have black face paint with the white and be Stang, who would have these magic diamond crystals that would give him power that were kept in a piranha tank.
Oh, yeah.
Continue. So that's the real Stang right there.
Oh, we missed out on seeing that. That would have been great.
So are you going to do more major – what was the name of your company?
We call it FWF, because the Figure Wrestling Federation. Actually have another one coming up. But we also do like live podcasts. So I'm just trying to be as busy as possible because, I need to pay the bills, but also because this is fun, right? Like you,
yeah.
How many things do you do? You got the cruise, you got Fozzy, you got wrestling, you got the podcast, you got the books. Like I want to be like you, Chris. I want to do everything I can because – yes, does it make money? Sure. And crumbs make crumb cake. You make a little here, a little there. But this is what I'm passionate about. And I'm passionate about so many different things. And like I said, I feel like any handcuffs that we're on are off now and I can just do whatever I want. And hopefully they're all successful. They're not going to be, but I'm going to try my best.
Well, let's talk about the podcast too and kind of the whole culture of Figures right now. Because it has continued to grow, as has your podcast and your show. So kind of give us a little bit of an overview at, I guess, what's going on in the scene of Figures right now and how that relates to your guys' show.
Yeah, so with the pandemic when it hit, Brian, I'm like, oh my God, like we're doomed. Like who's going to want to listen to this show about Figures? No one's going to have like money to be buying Figures. It was like the opposite because people were at home. They wanted to consume content and they weren't going out. They weren't going out to dinner. So they had this money to buy things and they're buying these childhood figures up. And it was just a perfect storm for us. And now for wrestling figure fans, I mean, listen, I grew up in the Attitude Era. I was a kid where I was flipping the channels between Nitro and Raw. And I feel like that's where we're at now with AEW and WWE and now all these other companies. I mean, there's wrestling on TV every night of the week. And for figures specifically, you know, AEW have their own figures. Mattel have their WWE figures. And now they're almost like, okay, you're going to make this figure this good? Oh, I'm going to make our figure this much better. And it's like this action figure renaissance where these two companies, not only these two companies on the shelves, but they're trying to make the better product. So it's cool for a figure fan. It's like, because now it's like collecting WWF and WCW, but it's AEW and WWE. But now there's all these other smaller companies who are making figures and making their own figures. And like now, I didn't even mention this, we set our own wrestling figure company where we make our own wrestling figures. So it's like, all this stuff that we've, like all this time and all this learning and dealing with other toy companies, we've kind of, you know, picked their brains and not stolen things, but stolen what works, what doesn't. And we're trying our own line that's going to launch before Christmas. And of course, we're going to make ourselves first. But then we're going to go and make guys who aren't like contracted anywhere and try to make them too. And it's just a great time to be a collector, I think, because there's just so much stuff to buy, whether it be in store or online. And it's just the access to buy this stuff. Like, you don't have to go on eBay and spend these crazy prices. Like, we have our own Patreon group that has its exclusive Facebook group where, you know, if you can't find the, let's say, the Chris Jericho figure, you can say, hey, can anybody out there find the Chris Jericho Chase figure or whatever? And then someone will find it and sell it to you at cost. We're not trying to, like, upcharge anybody in our group. So it's just a cool community that we've been building.
Lots to unpack there.
Yeah, it's a crazy world. I understand.
I was going to ask you about that, and you kind of just hit on it, about if you're not under contract to WWE or AEW, because there's so many performers out there. So you are starting your own action figure company.
Yes.
How do you get the figures made and all this sort of stuff?
So, like, one guy who just started off as a fan in our podcast, and it just spiraled where, like, oh, he told us where to get, like, pop sockets made for our phone. And they're like, oh, you're a merch guy, what else can you do? You have contacts in China, like. And then, long story short, now he's our guy, he's our partner. And we're dealing with like, you know, we have a designer and we're dealing with China and the factories and we're getting the prototypes made. But then, like, our goal is, so we're making something called, we're calling them Major Bendies, but they're like based off these Bendems figures from like the mid 90s, early 2000s. You actually have one, Chris. I don't know if you know.
I did. Are they like the Stretch Armstrong ones kind of?
No, they're like little like bendable guys. They're like, they kind of like arms and legs bend a little bit. Anyway, you have like two of them, actually, Chris. I'll send you a picture. But
hey, listen, here's, before you continue, Matt, here's the thing, and you know this. There are so many merch items and action figures and everything that we had no idea or even created. You would see them on royalty statements if you even bothered to read them. Oh, I made 15 cents off a Chris Jericho Bendy. What is a Chris Jericho Bendy? People out there listening, they don't send you one of everything.
You
have to go to the store to find them a lot of times, or have some fan give you one at an autograph signing.
Right.
So continue.
Yeah. So what we're doing with this line is we're going to try to make, like, for instance, like, for, we want to get guys like Danhausen, Nick Gage, guys like that. But then we also want to get guys who got overlooked during that era. Like, ooh, how come they didn't make a Gangrel Bendy or the Headbangers? Mm. You know, so we want to kind of, if you're a completist, we want to get the guys that they didn't make during that time period, but also make the new stars. So, right. We can't make current WWE guys or AEW guys, but anybody who's hot on the indies or anybody who's a legend who doesn't have some sort of legends deal, or now with AEW, we can make them too. And we're going to pay them, like, you know, we're going to give them royalties. We're going to give them products.
Of course.
So we're going to do it the way we would want to be treated. But if the first series flops, then it won't happen.
But I don't think it will, because I think you kind of know your market, right? Like, that's a great idea.
Yeah, listen, we're not going to be in Walmart and Target. It's all limited edition. You know, it's supply and demand. And you got to make sure in collecting things that the – how can I say this? That the demand needs to be greater than the supply. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So you make these limited edition. You make these low run. Like AEW does it with – they do Chase figures. So there's like a lot of Chris Jerichos that they've done. There's just one now with like a – with sunglasses and like a different jacket. It's like the Chase, and it's like hard to get. So all of ours are going to be, in theory, hard to get limited edition.
You know, it's really cool, because it just kind of shows how commerce is in this day and age. The book that I just put out, The Complete List of Jericho.
Oh, by the way, Chris, you spelled my name wrong in there. I'm a little upset about that.
I heard about that. And trust me, it's going to be fixed. It's already, listen, it'll be fixed on the second edition.
Okay, good. Thank you.
And I'm not even kidding. I got a whole bunch of things. And like, listen, every single match I've ever had, I'm sorry I put Z-A-C-H instead of Z-A-K or whatever. But the point being is that, I mean, the other prior books that I had done were done with publishers, right, and publishing houses. I mean, you wrote the foreword for the second one. And this one, they wouldn't take it. They said, this is too much of a niche product. No one's going to really want to buy this. And they didn't say that, but that's what they were implying. And I was like, all right, I'll do it myself. And I found out a place to self-publish, and I've sold almost the entire first print out. And I printed five figures the first printing. So it shows that there is a market, like you mentioned. Is it in, you know, Target and Walmart, or is it in, you know, bookends or whatever they call it? They even have them, any Barnes and Nobles.
Right.
And the answer is no, but you can get it anywhere if you go to the website and buy it. And people do that now. It's not like it used to be where you got to go online. It's like only online. That's too much of a hassle. Like, you could sell these figures online only and do great business if you had to.
Oh yeah. And like, that's our plan, is like, we have our own like website and stuff, obviously. And like, you know, we make a lot of different merch, and like, it's the most ridiculous stuff, but it's all low run, you know? So we do something called Stomp in Paradise, where we're like fake army guys, and we make like foam grenades and water guns, and we sell them out, but we're not making thousands and thousands, you know what I'm saying? You make them limited, and then like, there's a resale market for it on eBay and stuff like that. So like, the fans, some people are buying it because they generally want it, and some people are buying it because they just want to flip it immediately. So if as long as you buy it, I don't care what you do with it.
Did you know that there was this action figure culture when you started the podcast, or were you just like two guys that like, we got nothing else to do, let's just talk about this?
So I knew there was, because at the time I was like 34 years old collecting wrestling figures too, and Brian was the same way. And when we first met in wrestling school when we were 18, we hated each other because we were each other's competition. You know, I didn't grow up wanting to be a tag team wrestler. You know, I didn't grow up wanting to be Demolition. You know, I wanted to be like Hogan or Macho Man. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So we're like the same age, same look, same build. They're like, ah, shit. And they wanted to put us as a team, and we were both against it. And then we realized we're both 18-year-old kids who are still like secretly collecting wrestling figures, and that kind of broke the ice. And all these years later, like, you know, we were the only people, like, none of the other wrestlers, maybe a couple collect here and there, but no one's a diehard like us, you know, nobody we know at least. So we were just talking about every single day, and I just said, like, why don't we just like put this out there and let's see if there's people who want to listen. And it's such like a niche audience, because you need to, okay, like wrestling enough to listen to a wrestling podcast. You need to like wrestling figures enough to listen to a wrestling figure podcast. But if you're that deep, you're in. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're a diehard. So that's what's so cool about it, is because it's a bunch of diehards. I don't think you can be a casual wrestling figure fan. You know what I'm saying? I think you're either a wrestling figure fan or you're not. Like, you might have a couple like on display on your desk, but if you're like in and you're collecting them, like, you're in.
Yeah. I mean, the only ones that I know anything about are Chris Jericho ones.
Of course.
Because those, like, you know, actually AEW do send you products. Yes. So now I got a box of like the Chase figures and a box. And then, you know, I don't need all these. So now I'm complaining that I've got too many to give away. Which ones, like, in the history of wrestling action figures, I'm assuming they started kind of in the mid 80s with Galoob and all those ones. Are there certain ones that are worth more than others, like hockey cards or football cards?
Yeah, there's a lot that are worth big bucks, like in the 80s with the AWA Remcos or the WWF LJNs. Or my problem is this, is like, once you have them all, what do you do? Right. Like, especially like, for instance, like the WWF Hasbro ones, they went from like 90 to 95. There's about like 100 figures. Once you have them all, what do you do? So I had them all out of the package, like mid out of the package. So I'm like, all right, well, I'll get them all in the package. Okay. So I'm out of the package, in the back. Well, then what? You still love it. You still have that addiction. You still want to scratch that figure itch, as we say. So I started getting pre-production stuff, prototypes, things that never were released, things that are just in catalogs or magazines that never saw the light of day. So I have a literal top shelf in my toy room that's worth like hundreds of thousands of dollars of just things that never came out, things that were like mysteries, things that there's this Rhythm and Blues Greg the Hammer Valentine that was in this Toys R Us ad in the WF magazine. It never came out, but I have the figure because I track down these. That's not just me. There's an even smaller community just psycho stuff like this who like track down these ex-employees who like either have them in their garage or like in their attic, like in boxes, and like, all right, yeah, just take it. Or some of them actually know what they have and they want you to pay the big bucks. But it's a crapshoot. It's like sometimes you get a hell of a deal, sometimes you spend a lot of money. But I have some pretty cool stuff in there, like that Greg the Hammer Valentine. And like, I'm not even really a Greg the Hammer Valentine fan. You know, not that I'm not a fan of his, but
no, I got you.
But that figure, as a kid, this is pre-internet. You see it in this Toys R Us ad. You make your mom take it to Toys R Us after Toys R Us after Toys R Us. You can't find it. You think you just don't have it. Turns out it never came out. And now I have that one. It's my centerpiece, my pride and joy, my Greg. So,
my Greg. So they made the prototype of it and put it in the catalog, but didn't mass produce them for sale?
Yeah. So it's like,
you know why?
Because the Rhythm and Blues gimmick just ended. So it's like, get the new tag teams. It shows the Bushwhackers, Demolition, Rockers, and Honky Tonk and Greg, Rhythm and Blues. But then you go to Toys R Us, they have Bushwhackers, they have Demolition, they have Rockers, but there's no Rhythm and Blues. It's even on the back of the box.
Wow.
So like, you think it's like, there's no internet. How are you supposed to know it doesn't come out?
Right.
Later through like toy magazines, you learn. But yeah, so I have that hand-painted one that I found on some Facebook like prototype discussion message board thing. Like, so some ex-Hasbro employee posted this box that he found in his garage, like, of the bird's eye view of these figures, and like a hawk, I could spot Greg's boot. I'm like, that's Greg in there. I spent a lot of money on it, but I don't regret it one bit.
That's really cool, because I know my experience with action figures is mostly Star Wars, like the early Star Wars from the 77 Star Wars movie. I remember getting the Chewbacca and the Luke Skywalker that my mom bought me literally in 1977. And nobody, because you had G.I. Joes, which were the big ones,
right?
But no one had these 4-inch or whatever they are action figures. And that kind of started that whole culture. And I collected, not as good as you did, because like you said, there was no internet back then. Plus, I was a 12-year-old kid with no money.
Right.
But I still would ask for them for Christmas. I remember my cousin was always jealous of me because I had a whole platoon of stormtroopers, and he only had one. I'm like, dude, you got to ask for 10 stormtroopers.
That's
for
called
Christmas.
That's called army building, Chris.
Okay, there you go. It's army building.
Yeah.
And then I'm sure it's happened. This is probably how you got your Greg the Hammer Rhythm and Blues. I moved away from my house to go to wrestling school, and a couple years later came home. Where's all my Star Wars stuff? Mom sold it in a garage sale.
Oh,
didn't think I needed them anymore. I'm like, it's not your responsibility, Mom, to tell me what I need and don't need anymore.
Right.
It's like, mother.
Yeah, I remember as a kid, my grandma found me a Haku LJN at a garage sale, and I didn't know Haku came out. I'm like, oh my God, they made Haku? Who else did they make? You know, because there's no internet. So unless you see it in the stores. You don't know who comes out. So it was like, so whoever sold that Haku at the garage sale is probably kicking themselves. That's worth a lot of money now.
I love the part in the match out with Nick Gage where they had all the weapons at ringside, and one of them looked like kind of a glass case with action figures in it.
Yeah, that's called a Detolf. They sell those at IKEA. And they were bringing that out there. I'm like, you can't go through this. This is like very, very dangerous. I was trying to get away from there. Like if you see like Nick Busby by it, I'm like, no way. And I run away. I'm like, I'm not going through this. No way. Like I have these in my house, like a bunch of them. Like, this is not like thin little glass. If someone goes through this, they might die. I'm like, get me out of here. I think he swings a chair and it still doesn't break. That's how tough this glass is.
And plus there's figures inside.
Oh, no
you
way.
Want to damage them. You don't want to do that either. Last few questions for you. Now that we're talking about figures, besides the Greg the Hammer Rhythm and Blues, is there another one that's kind of the pride and joy of your collection?
Yeah. So it all started with this Macho Man figure. This is very boring, I'm sure, to people who don't like figures. But there was a JCPenney Christmas catalog in 1990, and it shows the new Hasbro ring with Hulk Hogan and Macho Man. But when it was released in stores, the regular Macho Man has orange trunks. So just that's how it was released in stores. But in this Christmas catalog, he's got green trunks, right? So people had some incentive to order this because, you get a different Macho Man. But when it actually came, it was the same old Macho Man with the orange trunks, right? So, oh, shit, whatever happened to that green trunks Macho Man? Well, it's in my display case because I have it. I was able to find the hand-painted prototype.
Wow.
Yeah, so now that's what started off for me. Once I got that, that's when I really went down the rabbit hole of seeing, well, what else can I find out there? And that's when I found all these, like, I just thought, oh, just go on eBay. eBay is like, first of all, eBay is great. I buy on eBay every day. But you can't really get the hard to find stuff on there because people are too smart. Because if you sell on eBay, there's the seller fees and the listing fees fees. Right. People want to do like bank transfers, cash deals. Like I live in Orlando twice. I've made deals in Disney World parking lots, like people coming on vacation.
Like a drug dealer.
Yeah, like a drug dealer. Like, and I'm talking like five figures, like not action figures, like five money figures.
Five, you know, figure like, press.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. Like some, once it was me buying, once it was me selling. So it all kind of evens out.
You mentioned AWA action figures. Who was included in that set?
Oh, the AWA figures, it starts with like Flair. There's like Rick Martel. And those figures I didn't grow up on, but I've since tried to get them all. And I'm a psychopath that I buy them in the box and I let them breathe. I open them up because I'm not buying this stuff to resell it, but I want these things to be absolutely mint. And now with like it being 2021, the technology being how good, as good as it is, people are like, so the AWA figures had cloth outfits, like whether it's Flair's robe or something like that. So people,
people are
making like reproduction outfits. So I don't want to buy one out of the package that might have a reproduction outfit. So I need to buy the original and open it up myself and be like, oh, you're ruining the value. I don't care. I'm doing it for me. I'm not doing it to sell it. Like, could I sell it eventually? Sure. But I'm doing this for me.
That's great, man. Last couple things. So what do you have planned upcoming wrestling wise? Like, is there going to be a GCW defense of this title? What's in the works?
Yeah. So I've been talking to Brett from GCW. Hopefully August, September, we can find a date that works. Got Impact stuff this week. Like, I'm going to West Virginia to wrestle Brian Myers, and then the next day we're flying to Michigan to do a toy store signing. And that's another cool thing with the podcast. It's like more things I get to do. So I can wrestle and do these. I've been doing more signings at toy stores and Comic Cons than I've wrestled.
That's great.
And I've been making more money and less bumps. So I love it.
No bleeding. And then the last question for you, what's been your favorite match that you've had post WWE so far?
I think it's going to be the obvious one, but it's this death match with Nick Gage. The buzz aside, let's say nobody ever saw it. It was still like this adrenaline rush for me. Creatively, it was fun to interact with the people in a way that there's no way I'd be able to do in WWE or probably anywhere on TV where I'm flipping them off. I'm doing like jerk off motions at them. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was just so fun to be an asshole and to feel heat. And I'm sure some of it was like, oh, let's boo this bad guy. But some of it was like, I hate this mother. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. I wasn't scared of it. I would love to take this opportunity and be a bad guy because I don't need everybody to like me. I don't care. If you don't like me, don't like me. And I think this time it's such an interesting dynamic because I can be me and be a babyface in Impact or on the Indies and then be me, say me, and be this hated heel of GCW. It's just this interesting dynamic, and I think it's fun. And of course, I'm gonna, you know, there's gonna be twists and turns, and I'll evolve it and change it a little bit. But I'm very creative, and I'm gonna see what happens. It's fun for me, you know. It's just so fun.
Yeah. Well, and it's cool too. Like we said in GCW, that people don't want to like you. You're twice the size of everybody there, so it's like, come on, stop me, motherfucker.
Yeah, exactly. There you go,
man. Don't forget the Mickey Mouse ears.
Yes.
Sell them at the merch table.
Oh my god, that's good. I might have to steal that one, Chris. That's a good one.
You got to make the 8x10s of you at the Disney Castle holding the GCW.
You know what? I'm gonna go to my 8x10 site. I'm gonna print out a couple now. Actually, that's a good one. I'm gonna do that. Hell yeah.
All right, dude. It's good talking to the GCW champion,
right,
Matt Cardona. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Chris. Awesome.